Okay, so good afternoon. Officially we start this meeting. So we have two committees here. Obviously we have some members that are missing. We have the Family Affairs Committee that I chair and the Social Affairs Committee that is chaired by my colleague Honorable Katia De Giovanni. On my left is Honorable Paola Messubonici, that represents the opposition in the committee as well, and Honorable Merda Balzarp, who comes also from the government side. So I would like to welcome Your Excellency. It is a pleasure for us to have this meeting, and to welcome also your delegation. This is an important, of course, topic when we discuss children, and we'll give you a brief of the discussions that we have in our respective committees. As I said, I chair the Family Affairs Committee, and during this legislature, we started our discussion about inflation, and inflation, of course, has an impact on family, including children and the well-being of children as well. Following that discussion, we had a discussion about the provision of free childcare, which the system as we know it today started from 2014. The benefits of that was that we saw a substantial increase of women either returning or entering the labor market. Of course, we discussed that topic also from other perspectives, not only the economic side, but also the educational and care side, and of course the effects on the family, including the children. At the moment, my committee is also discussing parental alienation, and a subject that I thought was going to be maybe easy or less challenging. It appears that we have a number of challenges, and the meetings are becoming even more interesting in this aspect. So I know that in line with the Sustainable Development Goals, and for some period of time I was responsible when I was minister in the office of the Prime Minister. Even when I was Foreign Affairs Minister, I went to New York to give a yes, exactly. That's it. Yeah, I think you're more informed than I am. I will not say more then. Okay. In line with the SDGs, we are talking about the dignity of all children here, and the right for all children to live a happy life, as it's stated also by the UN. And I say especially they have the right to live their childhood. And basically I think in all societies we have to look whether we are allowing all children to live their childhood as maybe we used to live it or enjoy it. So I believe that this is the responsibility of all of us, irrespective of our responsibilities, of course we'll have a discussion. But before giving the floor to you, Your Excellency, I would like that my colleague makes her opening remarks, and then maybe we can listen to you, and of course all of us here can make our comments, questions, whatever we wish to say.
Thank you very much, Honorable Abela. As my colleague said, I'm also a member on the Family Affairs, so for me it's a double role here. With regards to the social affairs, we have discussed research in primary education, not childcare. At the moment, we are discussing mental health. In fact, yesterday we have Romilda was also present, I believe. Also, Paola, we were discussing with the Commissioner statistics about mental health, and it's a discussion which we will continue in the near weeks. We have also discussed pensions and pensioners, and also has also invited the commission for persons with a disability. In my case, my journey in politics is not so long, not as long as Cardinal's for sure, because this is I have been in politics for 2 years, maybe 2 years campaigning before I was elected, so we won't find that much information about me. I do have found about him. But maybe some points, me being a psychologist as well, which intrigued me when I was also doing my research in preparation for this meeting, was maybe the difficulty that we find across cultures in defining what is domestic violence exactly, because I think in certain cultures it might mean one thing and in certain cultures it might be more lax than in other cultures. I think awareness about domestic violence is also crucial, especially about the emotional part of domestic violence, because we tend to think about domestic violence as being very physical, whereas we know, even through research, that emotional violence is very pervasive. It's very pervasive and it can also harm people indefinitely. And then maybe I would like to know about some suggestions about how Malta, maybe tiny Malta, but with a lot of resources and a very big heart, because we are very committed to this subject, can contribute to eradicate domestic violence when it comes to adults. And consequently, if we do our utmost to mitigate domestic violence between adults, especially when there are children, children are present, we are eradicating then violence between children, among children, and also avoiding that adults serve as negative role models to the children who will eventually then grow up and become adults of the future. Thank you.
Your Excellency, you have the floor, of course, and maybe we do a reaction afterwards, so it's okay. So we give you time to tell us what you want to tell us then.
First, I want to tell you many thanks, because, you know, my title, as you see it, is about, I am the Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General on violence against children, and my mandate is a global advocacy independent mandate to push the agenda of, you know, ending all forms of violence, exploitation, abuse, trafficking, and it's huge, against all children in the world. And so just to let you know, it's very short. And we are not 100 or 1,000 people, we have 10 people to do that. Huh? But anyway, this is not the issue. But just to put it, you know, just I want to remind you that this mandate was established, the, you know, 15 years ago this year. And it was established after the global study, and Malta was part of it, on violence against children that was launched in 2006, if I am not wrong. Yes. And with many recommendations. And the mandate was established to follow up the implementation of the recommendation. And I can tell you that the recommendations are still relevant and many, many countries are lagging behind them. After you had the Agenda 2030, and currently we have only 6 years remain to achieve the Agenda 2030, and among Agenda 2030 you have some SDGs who are related to violence, gender-based violence under SDG 5, child marriage, FGM, domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and you have violence also within school under 4, and you have child labor under SDG 8, and you have SDG 16.2, who is related to all forms of violence, trafficking, and torture, ill treatment. It's about homicide, it's about detention, so it's huge. And since 5 years, another global study was done on children deprived of liberty, and I am sharing this. And it's about children in the administration of justice to use detention as a last resort. And at the same time, it is about detention of children for migration purpose. And it's about children in institutions because they are disabled or they have a problem or they have behavioral disorder, so all this placement in institution because it's a deprivation of liberty, and also children deprived of liberty because it's not the case in your country, because of counter-terrorism or security grounds. And I am following all these things. So I am here in Malta since Tuesday morning, the end of morning, thanks. And I was using the opportunity of attending, you know, the conference, Eurochild conference organized by Eurochild, but also with Foundation, Malta Foundation, Marie-Louise, that all of you know, and using the opportunity to meet key stakeholders to have better understanding about what is going on in Malta, but also to push the agenda and to see what things need to be done differently by listening to all people, how we can cooperate together to move ahead. So I have the pleasure to meet the Prime Minister, Minister of Social Policy, Minister of Finance, the Commissioner, Minister of Education, I don't remember, I forget, Minister of Justice, and I am meeting you because for me the parliamentarian has a big role to play. And what I am expecting from this meeting, and to be very frank with you, is an interactive debate, frank, because I am not going to do a report on the country, but what I am going to do is a synthesis report based on what I heard and also what things appear from when we can move, how we can move forward in a concrete manner, and it will be shared with all the key stakeholders I met. So this is the only thing. And so when I am hearing you, and just to react to your two first points, family affairs and social affairs are interlinked. So this is a big problem of child protection and well-being because it's cross-sectoral. And this has made it more difficult because we need to know who is doing what and who is accountable on what, because this is very important, because it's not only working together, it's a collective responsibility. No, it's a collective work, but it's shared responsibility and we need to define, and I think it's the role also of the parliament regarding that. I totally agree with you reacting that inflation and social disparities and social exclusion and poverty that you have and multidimensional poverty are really, you know, huge driver for exclusion, huge driver from all for various forms of violence, and this is clear. And also for security and social cohesion. So all this is very well documented. You have not to wait for me. You know it's better than me. So the big risk is to be very careful when you have inflation, when you have fiscal, you know, adjustments, to make sure that the social sector with the big S, and I'm not speaking only about social benefit-free, all this, but also social services, and the access to social services is really maintained as a priority and as life-saving services. This is very important. During the pandemic, we saw it very, very in a very big manner, so I think it's important. Regarding, you know, free child care and regarding the benefits, I totally agree with you. It's about economic empowerment. It's moving people from survival, from begging, you know, assistance, to become more, you know, responsible, feeling better in their mindset, and also feeling empowered. And yes, it has an impact on education, on the health, on the development. This is clearly established. So we need to push this agenda. I will come back to parental alienation because we have many discussions with Minister of Justice, Prime Minister, and so on regarding that. Agenda 2030, I think you need to follow a lot on it because all states commit to end, you know, achieve Agenda 2030 achieve the 17 SDGs. And the 17 SDGs are interlinked. We cannot achieve one without achieving the other because you have poverty, you have hunger, you have climate, you have gender discrimination, you have all the other, the child labor, the labor market policies, many things are here, and violence, justice, birth registration, and here I just want to not forget it's not only about birth registration, it's also about legal documentation of refugees. That take a lot of time because this is what I heard, and, you know, all the documentation process. And I think it's really important that you follow on it. And because you have each year you have, an assessment, and you have a kind of ranking of states. So I think it's important to use it, and also your social vision is also embedded, you know, and embed Agenda 2030, and you have many policies that currently, and the most recent one I have in my mind is the National Child Policy Framework that is 2024-2030. You have also Child Guarantee that currently will be renewed. You have many who are, you know, in this line. Regarding, you know, I will come back to parental alienation. Social affairs, and I agree with you, primary education, mental health. Mental health is a big issue worldwide, and this is a big issue here. It's very difficult to report on it because of stigma, because of so difficulty of access to services, because of not early recognition, because you are a psychologist, I am a pediatrician, and we know that you have indirect sign when you can have early detection and act very quickly, and you have more and more mental health problems due to socio-economic issues, to the fact that they are mainly among children and parents, because they felt excluded, because they are disempowered. So I think it's really important regarding children with disability, also this is another issue, and we discussed it's a big hobby and big fight of Marie-Louise, is regarding also the access to services and mainly access to education, not only physical handicap or disabilities, but also sensorial one and the other, because I think you can make it in this country. And we have more and more devices to make sure that, you know, you have this social mixity. You cannot have parallel systems. So I think it's really important to push more this agenda. And regarding domestic violence, you know, all forms of violence, all forms have a psychological impact. And we never took into account, you know, very deeply all the psychological and emotional impacts. And they are more destroying because they are not seen. And they can have long-lasting impacts. We know it. And you have also the big issue of many children. I don't know. It was a problem that was highlighted by all actors. I have not the number or the percentage, but it seems that, you know, anxiety, despair, self-mutilation, suicide attempts is increasing. And this is, we have to be very careful because we could have react before because it will be a little bit late. And how, you know, regarding peer violence, because you are linking, there is, and we can share with you, and Thea, remind me, all the link between intimate partner violence and gender-based violence and violence against children. And the impact also on children when they are experiencing and witnessing domestic violence. And the link between that and the intergenerational cycle of violence. This is very, and not only domestic violence, even the corporal punishment and physical punishment, many things can bring, you know, to this intergenerational cycle that make it very, very, very difficult. And regarding the cross culture, because I heard culture coming from Morocco and, you know, another culture, and I think we have to be, you have many people from various cultures. But there is no culture that has to justify violence. And we have to be very careful when we are trying to build policies or to respond, to use culture to justify. Because in many cultures, things are changing. The culture is dynamic. But you have, what is important, you have real pushback on women's rights. You have more pushback. We are seeing gender discrimination increasing worldwide. Just to let you know, and this is really important. We are seeing also this big issue with migrants and refugees worldwide. So this is making it crazy. But we can make change if these people are considered as part of the society. And really to make sure that when we are doing raising awareness, when we are building these services, that they are accessible in the language that people are understanding. Because if not, it will be very difficult. If not, you will have stigma. To make sure that these people can go report, and I know that the Foundation, Malta Foundation did survey listening to all children here who are migrant refugees, regarding how they see the services. Some are not reporting because they have a fear to be deported. So because they are in this transition period, because temporary protection needs age assessment that takes long time, so and they have to do appeal, and it takes sometimes months but years. So this is really the access to services. You were speaking about peer violence, and I think one point that it's important that I heard is also all the violence online, bullying, cyberbullying, and this is very, very important to address. We discussed with the Ministry of Education, but also with the Ministry of Justice, but also it's important to empower children, to teachers, you know, counselors, families, to have better, you know, how they can protect themselves, but at the same time to have strong legislation. Regarding parental alienation, you know, when I arrived, the Ministry of Social Policies and Prime Minister was telling me that you are thinking about co-parenting, you know, and all these things. And, you know, in many, it is amazing because, as I told him, and I will repeat, in three countries, and it was recent, Luxembourg, Andorra, and now Malta, it was one big issue. It's amazing because they are small countries, each one is knowing the other, and the issue was currently because of divorce, because of, you know, conflicts, you have this big opposition between the social services and the judge. Those are defending children, you know, he has to stay with his mom, all right? And the other justice want to make sure that they are. The problem for me, and I discuss a lot, and I know that you have, we have to be very careful to decide this will resolve the problem. Because you have to assess each case. And it means how we define the best interest of child. And this is very, very subjective. And it has not to be. Because it's very clear what means, you know, the best interest of child. To make sure that this child, in the environment he's going to live, it's safe, is empowering, it's caring, it's providing him with or her with the education, with all the services needed. He can also, he or she can express without being, without fear. So this is really important. And here it's really to start thinking about, depending on each case, what is the best way to deal. Because if we impose, you know, co-parenting, and if you have some violence, it can be done by the mother or by, but some violence are not reported. So it will be very, very difficult. So just be very careful when you are discussing. And what I was telling to the Prime Minister, to be very frank, I don't know what is the problem here, but what it will be useful is if you can have, you know, a discussion not only about the legislation, but first, what are the problems? You know, encountering by the social workers, by this, and they have a kind of panel of parents, both men, father and mother, and also a panel of children who can express themselves in a safe pathway. So you will see where are really the problems, where are the challenges, and so you will build a law that will make, address these challenges. If not, it could be another challenge for people. Because co-parenting, no, I don't want, I want here, I want here, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, so I think it will be very... Now, to be very frank, I think it's not an easy task in many countries, but co-parenting, no country for the moment did it, but what they are doing is to go more deeply regarding what is not going well. And we were discussing about also the issue of child advocates that you have, that normally are independent from the both systems, if I am not wrong. But the problem is also their qualification, their role, and currently I heard that you have 10, but how, if you have child advocates that are duly well-trained, you know, and they define clearly, they can really see and help between, you know, all the protagonists. But this is one discussion. I am not telling you have to do that, but I fully understand that it will become more and more difficult. But the law has to respond, to arrive with a solution that cannot be, you know, to be flexible depending on the situation and not to impose another obstacle or another challenge. This is what I am telling, yeah? Because parental alienation is used more and more, and in some cases is not parental alienation. And we have also, we were discussing, because Thea is a lawyer and we are following this since many times, And you told me it's Innocenti who did recently a research, and we can share it with you. It's very well done. And explaining all that, and so if we can help, we will do. I will stop here because I tried to respond to your preliminary question, but for me it's really an interactive debate. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Very interesting, of course, remarks from your end. I will allow, of course, Honorable Paul Subonici, and then I'm always in the minority here because regarding gender, I mean, and then Honorable Romil Dazab. Thank you.
Practically three considerations or questions on my part. First of all, I thank you for being here. I know that you have devoted practically all your life for the promotion and protection of children's rights. Wanted to ask you, because you mentioned that every year there is an assessment on each country as to what are we, at what level are we with regard to the SDGs, whether you do have our assessment in the sense that what Malta is perhaps lagging back, and what are perhaps those SDGs where we are doing fine and perhaps reaching our goals, if you have that information. Another consideration is with regard to mental health in children. It's not a secret anymore that, unfortunately, even suicides in the younger generation, they are practically getting, the numbers are getting bigger. So possibly we have an issue there. So they say that prevention is better than cure. So what can be done to perhaps prevent children from having problems with their mental health, rather than obviously providing them with care when they're already suffering from mental health? Another issue perhaps, which is more on a wider scenario, we hear about the devastating outbreaks of wars, Israel, Gaza, Russia, obviously Ukraine, where we have a lot of children suffering. Unfortunately, these conflicts, those practically are the children who suffer most. What are the demands and the calls which we should be making in these regions to make sure that the children there are protected, and obviously any urgent humanitarian access should be granted, because obviously we speak about having children to protect children at all times, but eventually, practically, what are we doing to ensure that all these children in this region are having a life free of all this abuse and fear? Thank you.
So first of all, I also would like to thank you for sparing time joining us during this committee, because practically it's nice to share ideas, and it's also going to give vision also how we can support our children especially. Of particular importance to me, one subject that you mentioned, because I was looking at it recently, is the peer violence. The issue that I'm interested in it is because it's tackling a new era of violence on our teenagers, maybe even older or even younger than teenagers, which we need to safeguard. Nowadays, they are using social medias, and when before we're talking about violence when they used to attend school, nowadays we're looking at issues when they're at home, and still they are suffering from violence that they also are going to face when they're going back to school. So practically I think that we need to look much deeper, we need to gather more information on it, and also would appreciate if you can give us more view on how this issue is being tackled, so that we can also discuss it even locally, so that we're going to ensure that our children are going to be safeguarded. Recently, we're talking a lot about mental health, and practically the peer violence is one of the issues that's going to affect the mental health of our kids, and it's going to affect their future, because when you're going to suffer from peer violence when you're young, this is going to reflect the way that you're going to behave in the future when you're going to go out there, even for your job. So practically, we need to safeguard, and it's something that we need to have a correct vision on it, because even from the education point of view, we need to see how it can be also introduced. Also, from my side, I would also continue to look at mental health, because recently we're discussing it. It's important that this item is going to be brought more up, and we need also to gather all the information possible. Why we're saying this? Because we need to get different views of how we can support different countries, also larger populations, more experiences, and these experiences can help to support other countries, smaller countries, so that we can get the correct vision of how our country can lead to get the best for its population. Thank you.
I will start by, VNR and, the Voluntary National Review. You know, the Agenda 2030, the countries express their willing to present a Voluntary National Review. Malta presented only once, 2018. Some countries are presenting each year. Some countries are presenting three times. So it's up to you also to push your country to present at least its second VNR, no? It was done during, so since you leave, Agenda 2030 left. So you have to come back or push the agenda. Now, but I think it's a key moment because the process of the, it's not only about the reporting, it's about the process, because it takes time, because it's a moment when you are consulting all people, not only the government, but also civil society, communities, even children, parliamentarians, to have a snapshot where you are. This is very important, and you will see what is working, what is not working, and what was the achievement regarding poverty. Regarding, poverty, I know that by 2030, or by 2030, they want to reduce it to 6%, if I'm not wrong. This is the only number I have. But regarding hunger, I have no idea. Regarding, health and mental health is part of it. It's really a wonderful moment of review regarding, that, and to see where you are going. And this is a strong moment, and I think it will be useful to push that. But in the same time, you have other mechanisms. You have the CRC, and you have the report of the CRC in 2018, if I'm not wrong, and currently they are using, the recommendation of CRC to move forward, so it's important to remind that. And you have the Universal Periodic Review. I don't know when they did the last one. And here you... In 2020, it was done this year.
Yeah.
So... And here it's important because you have huge recommendation to the country. And to use this, really, because UPR is an intergovernmental process. And the states who are, providing recommendation to the state, and the states can accept some and can refuse some. But you can ask them why they refuse, and when they accept, they have to implement. So use all these mechanisms, because this is very important. And we can send you the last UPR if you after that. But VNR, it's up to them. But what I am doing is I am reviewing each year, and I can share with you what we have. And I can share with you also the big report that is done by UN regarding, the advancement of, Agenda 2030, that will be presented again during the high-level political forum. So I can share with you what we have. Regarding what I am doing, I am reviewing each year the countries who are presenting their VNR. I am reaching them, the PR, national authorities, looking at the process, looking at the results, and doing a kind of review to use this moment as a strong agenda and really to advocate more on investing in people and investing in children. This is very important. So that this I can share it with you. But you have, because I was before coming telling that since 2018 they were not presenting anything, but in the same time, your Prime Minister and all your government is telling that children are their priority. So I think it's... mental health. Yes, prevention, sure. But we need to take, and I am speaking, you know, you are psychologists, but what is important, mental health has not to be dealt only by the Ministry of Health. We have to be very careful, because you have all these social, cultural, economic determinants. And you can prevent, sure, if you are detecting very early all the risk factors. And we know the risk factors, when you have exclusion, when you have violence, when you have lack of opportunity, when you felt, you know, when you are victims of violence, when you are victims of gender discrimination, of racism, of xenophobia, all things, we know it. And you have some signs that need to be detected very quickly. So here is the question. Have we, many psychologists will do it, I'm not sure, but you have social workers, you have people who are close to the communities, and this is very important, this front line, if they are well trained, you know, in psychosocial approach, and, you know, with backed up, you know, backed by psychologists that can help them when they have questions, it's really important they can detect very quickly. Another entry point is the hospital, and, you know, this is very important. And many nurses and many physicians, pediatricians including, didn't recognize signs of, you know, this is very important. And some countries, what they did, they included in the curricula of the nurses, of the people, of the teacher, because teachers are also on the front line, just to recognize, you know, you have some signs that showed you that something is going wrong, and to act very quickly. But what is important, if we are making sure that all these services, these integrated services that include education since the early childhood, that it's safe, that it's inclusive, including online, if we have mental health and sexual reproductive health embedded, if we have justice, really when you have problem you can, if you have child-sensitive reporting mechanism, gender-sensitive reporting mechanism, you know when you can report safely when you have a problem. And it's really protecting yourself, protecting your privacy, but providing, you know, the response. And if you have social protection, that, yes, it's cash benefit, but also access to all the services. But most importantly is working with the communities, with the women, with the leaders of the communities, with children, raising not only awareness, but making them becoming actors of change, not seeing them as passive recipients of services, because the big risk when we are dealing with culture, it's to tell my culture is the top, your culture is number two. But because in each culture is to surf on the positive social norms. And I can tell you this is work. Because I know that you have FGM, I know that you have early marriage, I know that domestic, but gender discrimination, it's not only from outside. It seems that also here, gender discrimination in Malta is existing also. So I think it's really important to deal with this issue regarding that. But the main point is to avoid institutionalize all children who have mental health issues. Because the big risk is putting all these people behind, you know, institution, and we forget them. We have to be very careful. Because we know that many things can be treated, you know, outside. But treated not only working with children, but working with his environment, because you have the boss. And this is very important, to be very careful to not have all these centers when you are. And you have another issue, and you just want to have an alert. We are speaking more and more about children and adolescents with behavioral disorder. And I am hearing it a lot. So what means behavioral disorder? Nobody is able to tell it. But the problem is that they don't have an idea about the development, physiological and psychological development, and pre-adolescence and adolescence is a moment of testing many things. So we cannot, all of them, label them behavioral disorder, putting them, you know, in schools that are in center because we need to deal with them because they are not obeying, because they express themselves, because they are using many things. Regarding, you know, the conflicts, I think I am really very disappointed to be regarding the response of Europe as a whole, apart 3-4 countries, and the European Parliament or European mechanism and European countries were not able really to have a joint strong communication, because children are paying the huge tributes. This is unacceptable, and it's continued today. And also the fact that we have double standards. And this, it was a strong signal sent by Europe, by United States, and their allies, because the big issue was when Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine starts, yes, it was awful, but children were the priority. Putin was judged and got really the warrants, these things and so on. What is happening in Gaza is not the same. And this is giving a strong signal that life, the costs of life of children have not the same price. And this, I can tell you that it made me having many, many concerns, and we use, you, United Nations use all the mechanisms they have. We have a huge number of staff who are killed, you know. They cannot have access to humanitarian, and I was seeing this morning that settlement is continuing, and currently in West Bank, officially, it's hectares and hectares. Or something. And there is lack of accountability. There is a problem also of the Security Council that it's not working. During the Pact for the Future, they are trying to review it. I'm not sure that it will be. And we are in a divided world. And Europe is moving right wing, and this is another big issue, very, very right. So I am not very optimistic, but I think, just so I want to let you know, your Ambassador Vanessa, who is in New York, did a wonderful job. My God, she was one who was speaking up. She is dead, really pushing and making sure that children are not paying huge tribute, using the informal way, formal way. Malta did it well. But what is important is how you can rely on other countries, and this is a big thing. And here it's really to see how within the European Parliament, but I am not sure regarding the composition, how it will be, but using also your voices and your connection to push the agenda. You are part of Europe and you can make it, to be very frank. And regarding, you know, peer violence through social media, but also AI and currently all the artificial intelligence with virtual and so on, and there is a lot of experiences that I can share with you regarding that. We have also many, many child-friendly versions done by children for children. You have examples in some countries when, you know, dealing with violence online, because violence online is not only child sexual abuse material, sure. It's not only cyberbullying, it's hate speech, it's discrimination, it's promotion of society, it's gaming, it's gambling, it's theft of identity. It's huge what is going on. At the same time, it's a wonderful tool to provide service. But the problem here is really to make sure that in the legislation, and we discuss a lot with Minister of Justice, to make sure that you have mandatory regarding crimes against children online, to make sure that you have mandatory regulation, and the ICT sector have to report on it. This is very important because many are not reporting, to make sure that you have child safeguarding on board, to train, you know, counselors, teachers, you know, families and so on, and there are many things that already exist, really to be aware of that, but most importantly is to involve children as part of the solution. They know very well, and the progress made in many schools, in many places, were done under the leadership of children and youth. And they are doing applications. They are wonderful regarding that. So, and we can share with you many things that were done regarding that. So, I have two questions. I think I respond to your question. Yes. I have just two questions. I heard Commissioner, you met him regarding mental health. You are speaking about the Commissioner on Children's Rights. Because I met, and I have a question for you. Because Commissioner is an ombuds, but not an ombuds. Because in the same time, it's an institution that it's not independent regarding international law, because they are not compliant with Paris principles. They are under the Ministry of Social Policy. Normally, it's the Parliament who has a role. They have to report to the Parliament officially, not only sharing with you, because this is the independence. This is very important, and because currently it's not an easy task for them. It's not, and you are missing. You have a national human rights institution that is generalistic or generalist, but this is not. It's not in line with the standard. She has good relationship with the minister, sure, but this is not an ombuds. And if it's an ombuds for children, it has to be, and we can send it to you also, it has to be not only compliant with Paris principle, but also with the general comment 5 and 10 related done by CRC regarding also the representativity of children and the access to children. So this, I think it's one. And my other point, because I saw this wonderful national policy framework 2024-2030, I just want to know, I know that was many consultations, I am still waiting to see if it has been budgeted, and I want to know what is the role of your commission and more widely the parliament in oversight of the implementation of these policies, the budget allocated to these policies. I just want to know if you have a role, because I think you can make a lot of difference regarding, you know, because you have a lot of policies. The problem is their implementation and who is implementing what and what is the impact on people, as you highlighted.
So thank you very much. I think we do have our challenges as well, in the sense you mentioned a lot of things that are happening, but maybe they are happening under different ministries, maybe not so much coordinated. That is what I also get from your comments. Do you think that it is more advisable to have, let's say, children's rights in general under one ministry, irrespective of the responsibilities of different ministries, or is it that things can remain the same, but with more coordination?
I will respond very quickly.
You can switch on, please. Thank you.
What is important is to translate this in concrete services.
Yes.
It's not having another policy, to be very frank. Mm-hmm. And the Ministry of Planning and Budget has, we discussed already, because it's, just to let you know that the violence against children costs 5% of national GDP. It's huge. And, you know, the impact of violence against children, and we will send you all that because we did a lot regarding that. The impact of violence against children, you know, the consequences are physiological, psychological, is $393 billion per year. So I can tell you that it's not only, a human rights and moral imperative. It's also about human capital, and it makes economic sense. But what I am suggesting here is when, you know, a policy is done, to make sure that the budget is clearly established and the responsibilities are clear. And this I have no idea. And in the same time, when it is adopted, is to have an oversight, you know, when are we in the implementation, what are the gaps? This is a question that you can put, really very frankly. Because if not, but not really asking another for another policy, they will sit together again. They are aware about that. But for example, I can tell you, you have the House of Children. It was integrated services to avoid having children going. But it's up to the judge. Some judge can go, some judge don't want to go. So I think what is important is that, okay, you have this because it's integrated. Why it doesn't work? Why? I think it's you have some pieces that you can react on.
Regarding the question about the Eurochild Convention and the report, I'm seeing the press release issued by the Office of the Prime Minister here. It seems there was a number of submissions that were sent. In fact, here it is stating that there were 200 submissions from children and 35 additional submissions from stakeholders in the field. I don't think that formally Parliament or any committee was, let's say, approached, or I don't think that neither your committee or even my committee or any other committee was, let's say, consulted officially as a Parliament. I don't think that did not happen. It seems this is
a speech that made the Prime Minister yesterday, but it
was about, if I'm not wrong, correct me, and I want to, because I have recorded it also.
You need to switch off.
I think he was speaking about also, if I'm not wrong, about, you know, all this youth advisory forum, and regarding also the vote on 16 years,
yes, okay,
this is what he was speaking about, but not not the national policy framework. I mean, I discussed with the Minister of Social Policy. He told me that there are wide consultation, but I cannot tell you.
Mm-hmm. So basically, the responsible ministry is the Minister for Social Affairs, for Social Policy.
But
I mean,
justice also, because
yes.
Yes.
But the thing is that I didn't see this policy framework, actually. I didn't read it. Yeah, I didn't read the document, I mean. So I don't know whether... I'm pretty sure that it mentions others, ministries and responsibilities. So basically everyone has to... No, the thing is that I think we have a number of very nice documents. The issue is always to have those documents implemented. I'm speaking also from experience. I spent more than 7 years as I was also Home Affairs Minister before. So when it comes to migrants and everything, I know something about that as well. And during my time, we changed the policy, actually, especially when it comes to family and the children, not to leave anyone in detention. And so we made some changes there. I don't know exactly what happened afterwards or what's happening at the moment, but I think the policy is still the same. It's how it is maybe implemented or so. So yes, I think it will be at some point in time either my committee or your committee. We need to discuss maybe this policy framework as well, or
together,
or we can do it jointly as well. I mean, even have to. You can, if you want to add something, please feel free to add whatever you wish. Yes, thank you.
As far as I just want to clarify that the policy is in the hands of the Minister for Social Policy. It's coming from that. This was said during the conference of the Foundation Eurochild. So it's just that to clarify.
Very true, and thank you for clarifying about that. So I think at some point in time, Parliament needs to discuss that. And when it comes to the budget, I don't think that there will be a specific budget for the implementation of the policy of this document per se, but it will be budgets will be allocated to the respective ministries and through those budgets that then... So I think that is how usually budget is given to each and every ministry, not specifically for a particular document, but you have the document, you have to implement it, of course, but with budget being allocated. So if you look at the financial estimates, you will not see the framework or policy and then... Yes, exactly.
But the problem is, regarding the Ministry of Reliance, the problem is, it's not only about finance, it's about human resources.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an issue here.
True.
Because you can have wonderful programs that we need to reach, but the question is...
The question is, do we allocate enough resources? And when we are allocating resources, if it's appropriate, because they have to complement the other. Not to have, because it's crazy, you cannot have one family, if she has a problem to deal with the one who is working on social, to deal with the other, this is crazy, something is going wrong. We are spending time, we are spending energy, we are spending money without impact, and we are building more and more lack of trust in institutions. And your role is not only, did you have the budget, it's really, okay, this it was done, sure, to do that. So what it's allocated, who is doing what, I think it's a problem of accountability and monitoring. And you have a big role regarding that. Because you can have a huge budget that is not spent. The problem is how this is spent that changes the situation. If not...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we have a challenge when it comes to human resources. And I think this is across the board, especially in certain fields. We are seeing, for example, we mentioned the provision of free childcare. You need to have trained personnel that deal with children, and that is a challenge, because we have a number of childcare centres that opened and they have a ratio of that they need to adhere to as well. Otherwise, it can impinge on their on the standards and everything. So we acknowledge that there is an issue when it comes to human resources, especially in certain fields. So yes, I mean that is something that, and maybe it's even more important that ministries work together, because if you need to have specific resources, especially qualified resources, no one is going to find enough for their own responsibility. So yes, one can complete the other. I wanted to add something about the question that was made by my colleague, Honorable Paul Musubonici, regarding the, let's say, international situation when it comes to Palestine and Israel and other conflicts. First of all, I want to reiterate that in our document for the Security Council, children play an important role, and that is why our ambassador Vanessa,
she
She has 4 years. I was the one that appointed her there.
Okay.
And I told her that she has to. You see, I think I did. Well, I'm not going to speak about
it.
So she's went there 1 year before we actually got elected. Now we have 2 years, and then I think she will spend some time after that as well. So. But in our document, I mean, children and children in conflict, and it's crystal clear one of our main points. And I'm happy that she and together with the Foreign Affairs Minister are doing a great job in that. But the issue is when it comes to the European Union. I used to criticize the Union when I was Foreign Affairs Minister. So in the Foreign Affairs Council, I used to say that Europe, rather the European Union to be more precise, is almost absent collectively when it comes to the Middle East. And this is also the situation today, because when there were talks about the situation in the Middle East, the European Union was absent from even participating in the talks. You had the US, you had other countries, but not the European Union at some point in time.
Except Spain,
no, but I mean as an institution, you know?
You
need to switch. Yes.
The European Parliament was meeting, and it was in the beginning of the war, you know, it was 1 month after. And I met the Parliament, and I become crazy because they spent 2 days really regarding the first common position, and they were requesting a humanitarian pause. I told them I never heard in my life humanitarian pause. So it means that they will stop killing during 3 weeks, and after they will kill again. It's ceasefire or not ceasefire, but humanitarian pause. And it was the only word that they agreed all on it, just to.
No, I know the feeling, because times when we discussed the Middle East, to find a common statement was like, and that is because there are different opinions among member states. It's crystal clear. So, unfortunately, still the. But yes, I mean, children are paying the highest price, and double standards, of course, because on one region we agree on this, on the other region it's totally different. So, unfortunately, that's the case, and. In one of my recent speeches in Parliament, I said it clearly that the European Union needs to be more present. One, because I think it's a war and a conflict that exists for too many years, and it's just around the corner. It's in our region, so we need to be a main player. And also because the European Union should be a global player, not just a regional or just European one, sort of. But I think that, you know, this is a very unfortunate thing that is happening. And the first excuse that the Prime Minister of Israel said was that Israel has the right to defend itself. But I think that right now is long overdue in the sense that it expired. And now it's not defending yourself, it's attacking the other side and occupying more. So, and I had the pleasure to meet Prime Minister Netanyahu when he was also not only Prime Minister but also responsible for foreign affairs. We had discussed this during that time. Now the situation is out of hand. I mean, it's
now it's a problem of intimacy and lack of intimacy.
Yeah.
Because, sorry, he's not respecting anything. All the international mechanisms, the international justice, you know, ICG, there's so many things. Sorry. If one has done it from Africa, from Orsini, he will be arrested in one place.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a big issue regarding the standard here. And because of the United States also. This is another position. And I think this is a bad signal to send to people when you have mechanism. The United Nations was created for peace after the Second War. And when you are seeing the map worldwide, Sudan, in all places, my God, and those who are paying the huge tribute are children each day in every part of the world. So something is going wrong, and we feel powerless, helpless, and because of there is no accountability mechanism, because the security concept of security is outdated. It is not, you know, reflecting the reality of the country
that it's, we are where we are. And the power imbalance.
This also sheds light on the UN, because the UN is, as you said, it's responsible in the sense to try and avoid conflicts and everything, but today is powerless. And one veto in the Security Council stops everything. So that's.
They need to review it. It's impossible. You can continue to have a veto because you are against and you are against. It's crazy. So, and you cannot. Five countries are deciding for the whole world.
Exactly. Exactly.
And this, I come back to what you are telling, to have European Union as a bloc, to have Africa as a bloc, to have Asia as a bloc, really to arrive to tell, but because the interests are not represented. I think it's really a key moment we are facing, a strong key moment worldwide when change is needed.
No, I can go on and on. But if there are other points that my colleagues would like to mention or react to, or, okay. So, thank you very much. It was very insightful and... Yeah, I mean that's how Parliament should be. I've been in Parliament for 28 years, and I think this should be. I mean, Parliament has its role, separate from the executive. Even though our system is a bit of a mix, because government is part of Parliament. I mean, you have to be elected in Parliament to be in the executive. That's our system. But still, I mean, parliamentarians, even us, that we come from the government side, I think it's our role that we are scrutinizing the government as well. That's our role, even for the government to be better.
To be very frank, you can make it. You have all the ingredients to make it. What I saw, and you can make it, and you can take the lead in this region.
No, because the budgets are there. I mean,
the budgets are there, the resources are there, just to sit and to tell these are the gaps, how we can, and listen to people, and to be very concrete. You don't need an expert coming from I don't know where, but just to see, you know, where are the gaps, and here to move forward, because if not, it would be a pity. And regarding training, it's not additional training. You have strong institution. Why this is not embedded in the curricula since the beginning? So... regarding, you know, that people really, and it's very easy, many even low-income countries did it, to avoid training, additional training. You cannot reformat people once they are already trained. And I think you can make it. To be very frank, I trust that you can make it.
So thank you very much once again. We look forward to receive the documents that you mentioned, and we will that we keep in touch also to maybe have a wider vision of what can be done, and our respective committees definitely in the coming weeks and months will continue discussing this issue.
Thank you
very much.